Hello, I'm Andy Zaltzman. Before we start this week's news quiz, I'm doing a charity collection. I'm trying to raise £122 million for our featured charity this week, COVID Scammers in Need. I've been collecting around the country for the last 2 weeks now, and so far in the bucket we have, let's have a look, 5 bottle tops, a commemorative Matt Hancock action man, a 2p piece that someone mistook for a baby hedgehog that's been run over by a milk float, oh, and a few million unusable hospital gowns. So their resale value means we are still now just £122 million short of our target. Whilst I list all the fixtures and fittings from the BBC Radio Theatre on eBay, why don't you listen to this week's news quiz? Hello, welcome to the news quiz. I'm Andy Zaltzman. There was a BBC questionnaire this week that revealed that 78% of people think the BBC should offer something for everyone. So later on, we'll be hearing David Attenborough commentating on an endangered breed of puffin, who's also a dodgy copper, play a hybrid sport based on football, snooker and true crime against Amal Rajin in a spangly ball gown whilst he eats Mary Berry's new recipe for Alan Titchmarsh's geraniums cooked with lashings of Peppa Pig in an anti-Victorian bedpan that's worth less than Fiona Bruce thought it was, over the sound of Jules Holland playing a duet with all of Henry VIII's wives while everyone surreptitiously plots against each other, a national treasure breaks wind and they all have to guess what the weather would be like if they were shipped somewhere north of Cromarty. Happy now? Now here's Claire Balding with the travel. Our teams this week, well, we're following recent updates from the Middle East. Our teams this week are Team Disarming against Team Alarming. On Team Disarming we have Ria Lina and Adam Kay. And on Team Alarming we have Zoe Lyons and, from the Financial Times, Stephen Bush. Now, this week, we are going to give each of our panellists a question in their own specialist sphere of expertise. So, Zoe, give me a number between 1 and 4.
3.
That means we start with Stephen. Stephen, you write for the FT about politics and the economy, so we'll give you a question in your specialist area. Chancellor of the Exchequer Rachel Reeves is considering putting up what in November?
People's backs?
Is it the latest version of her CV on LinkedIn?
Is it the heating? Well, I guess that's probably a bit expensive these days, so maybe not, yeah.
Tax.
Yes, yeah. Correct, yes. Taxes, particularly on the wealthy. Now, you've written quite a lot about the Labour government's struggles. What sort of... Is there any possible way they can pull a sufficiently rabbity rabbit out of the hat at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, look, they could invent time travel or cold fusion or, you know, like, anything could happen, you know. But they have got this real problem that they made a bunch of promises at the last election and they said they would basically fix everything and someone else would pay for it. And someone else has decided they don't want to pay for it. And so now they're going to have to make all of us pay for it. And that's, well, I don't know about anyone else, but I'm not exactly thrilled about the prospect of, of paying for it myself. I much preferred it when someone else was going to do it. And so they're kind of stuck between, do you break your promises on fixing things? Do you break your promises on tax? And it looks like they're going to break their promises on tax. And maybe if they're unlucky, they'll also break their promises on fixing.
All right. And does that work like a double negative in maths, where that becomes then keeping a promise if you break both promises at the same time?
I mean, there's a lot of staff turnover in Downing Street, so with lines like that, maybe you're in. Your next job could be in.
I'm clinging to that dream. Zoe, are you very excited about the forthcoming budget in November?
I mean, I literally can't wait.
Yep.
I'm just counting down the days. I've got a little budget advent calendar, which is like a regular calendar, but all the windows have been boarded up. It's nail-biting stuff, isn't it? But we've got to get the money from... We are so in debt, aren't we? I've really buried my head in the sand about how in debt we are as a nation. I mean, the letters have been coming in, but I just haven't been opening them. Then, today I opened one and I was like, does that say 2.7 trillion? Oh, my God. I think as a nation, we're going to have to just get together and do a runner. That's the only thing. We're just all going to have to leave.
Right.
That is it, because there is no plugging that.
Yeah.
They called it a fiscal hole on the radio earlier, and it really made me wince.
So, I mean, in terms of, you know, how we raise money, obviously trying to get money from the rich has not always proved quite as obviously successful as it might have done. So has anyone got any suggestions for other ways of raising public money that might work?
The billionaires are more than free to go to Dubai. Feel free to go, but your money stays.
Right.
A millionaire over there, happy with that plan?
Yeah.
That's someone who lives next to a millionaire, I think.
I think, I don't want to go too big on this, I think I might have solved it.
Okay, that's cool.
So if you charge people $5,000 to fly a flag from a lamppost and $20,000 to put one on a roundabout, I think that might be us sorted.
Mm. Right. Well, that's... That has the sort of double benefit of not only are you expressing your patriotism through the flags, but you're also contributing to national improvement through...
Absolutely. It's, yeah,
I can't see how anyone would be against this. But... any other suggestions?
I mean, is a GoFundMe beyond... You know, we could just set a realistic target and just say, you know, Britain needs a little bit of help. We've made some poor decisions. And there you go. Any little bit counts.
I was thinking that, you know, there's a lot of talk these days about free speech. And I'm obviously very in favour of free speech.
Too much, but, if you ask me.
Well, I just think that if you say something that isn't backed up by fact or it's just, in my opinion, this is my truth, then you pay for it.
Right. Mm. That could end all conversation.
As an autistic, I'm all right with that.
I think one of the reasons why a lot of people are quite annoyed with the Labour Party is that, as the scale of the Conservative defeat showed, right, everyone knew that we'd had a bunch of cowboys in. And there's something even more annoying than the person who's broken your boiler than the second person coming in, whistling a lot, being like, wow, some mistakes were made here. And you're like, yes, I know, I haven't had hot water for quite some time. And it's like, are you going to fix it anytime soon? I think, if anything, the problem is they actually should have probably just broken the promise on day one rather than... or not made it, right? You know, it's a bit like when someone has to take the bins out. My partner does this. She gets home, she changes into her pyjamas, somehow at the speed of light, and she's like, we're out of milk. And it's just like... And that's essentially what the Labour government has done for the last year. They've been like, oh, yeah, I've changed my pyjamas, I can't raise taxes.
I mean, in terms of the boiler analogy, I guess the problem for Labour is that, you know, they're basically offering the same half-assed boiler fixes. Then you've got Nigel Farage and Reform are coming saying, we're going to take your boiler out and replace it with an animatronic Queen Victoria sex doll. You know, it's quite hard to compete. Hard to compete with that.
So I see what the metaphor's aiming for, but to be honest... I think if I had a choice between not having a working boiler... and having an animatronic Queen Victoria sex doll, I would continue to bathe by boiling the kettle.
In terms of the state of the economy, there was a new IMF forecast out this week, and the UK is set to beat all other G7 forces and become reigning champion at what?
Tiddlywinks, I mean...
Celebrity traitors.
Yes.
The correct answer is inflation. And there was different interpretations of the figures from the IMF report, in which some media outlets said that Britain is going to have the second biggest growth and others said it's going to have the worst growth.
I'd get a third opinion.
Yeah. So essentially, we need to both completely change everything we're doing economically and also keep up the good work. How do you balance that?
I mean, don't look at me.
Okay,
I have no idea. Nobody else has a clue either. I don't know. We all go back to cottage industries and start knitting our own vegetables. That's the only thing I can think of.
I think you're right, and we should celebrate it, because as far as I'm concerned, we've always been second best in the G7. So we're second lowest life expectancy, second highest obesity rates, second highest disease burden, and finally we've won. Hooray, good for us.
It's Chancellor Exchequer Rachel Reeves has been limbering up for her November big red box boombastic budget bonanza. Someone's got to talk it up. And there are suggestions that taxes may have to go up, even, whisper it quietly, for the rich. It shows how desperate things are economically, that the government is even thinking about trying to extract more money from those who are most able to afford it and least likely to notice it. What's that saying about broadest shoulders? Those with the broadest shoulders generally have the rudest parrots. The government has thus far, in its time in office, cut through to the wider public like a spoon through granite. And there is widespread scepticism over whether it can deliver the growth it promised. It's, having spent so long in opposition, Labour is now coming face to face, eyeball to eyeball, with the T-Rex of reality. And no doubt thinking back wistfully to The Joy of Opposition Politics, which is one of the less well-selling books in the 1970s The Joy Of series. The latest figures from the IMF have showed that it's full speed ahead for UK PLC, but unfortunately that full speed is stationary. According to the figures, the UK took silver medal in the prestigious GDP growth category, but according to the Daily Telegraph, the UK also finished last in the living standards growth category, which all goes to show statistics are like comedians at the Riyadh Comedy Festival. If you treat them right, they can be made to say whatever you want them to say. And at the end of that round... it's 4 to Stephen and Zoe and 2 to Adam and Rhea. Right, Adam, it's your specialist subject. Now, you are a qualified doctor, my very favourite kind of doctor, incidentally. We have a question on the NHS for you. NHS bosses are reportedly urging Rachel Reeves to allow them to raise money through what fundraising techniques?
This is a really nostalgic news story. So basically, some deranged NHS bosses are suggesting that hospitals should be allowed to, let me quote this correctly, allow private capital investments into parts of the NHS in order to build new facilities, which is otherwise known as PFI, which I'd rather hoped we were finished with when Tony Blair left. But then again, I'd rather hope we'd finished with Tony Blair when Tony Blair left and now he's Prime Minister of Gaza or something. So why did PFI not work for us? So essentially, we've still got the tail end of last PFI. There's currently £57 billion of PFI contracts still in place, and it's going to cost us another £160 billion to pay them off. Worst hits trusts are paying £1 out of every £6 they have servicing these loans. Essentially, hearing this did feel a bit like the turkeys putting in a big order for tinsel. The chief exec of NHS providers, a guy called Daniel Elkeles, said there's enormous appetite from the private sector to invest. I bet there is, Daniel Elkeles, because these people are going to make profit out of public funds.
So in terms of, you know, how we raise money for the NHS, I mean, Rhea, you're also a medical scientist. Any suggestions?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of other options that we can do. You know, I think I'm definitely up for maybe televising a bachelor auction of eligible doctors. I think we could also maybe, I mean, we bet on so many things. Do you think, is it wrong to bet on survival odds?
I mean, I think we're probably looking at this from the wrong direction. So, essentially, we're short, in the next 4 years, 40,000 hospital beds. And actually, what we need is bunk beds. Then you don't need to build any more hospitals. You get twice as many people in the ones you've already got. Right. I don't know why no one's thought of this.
Yeah. I guess another option is just to tell 40,000 people that they're fine.
Yeah, that's 111.
I mean, you know, they often describe it as a sort of NHS lottery, don't they, when you're going for treatments, depending on where you are. So we do have NHS, perhaps, scratch cards that the dermatology unit could hand out. Get 3 symbols and you get your MRI scan.
We should just accept that you're going to wait for hours and hours in A&E, and the cafe should just become a 24-hour bar. A lot of people would be much more relaxed about waiting for a long time in... you know, if it were more like an airport, right, where you're like, oh, well, I'm here, but, you know, I'll go to W.H. Smith, which is inexplicably open at 5 a.m. in airports. Yeah. I think we just need to lean into the fact that we don't provide proper medical care in this country anymore.
And we'd probably save quite a lot of money on anaesthetists as well if people... drink.
You're suggesting a sort of NHS Wetherspoons collab?
It's like the Wetherspoons in like Heathrow is like, it's actually one of the really classy Wetherspoons.
I've said that to myself often at 2 a.m. I'm supping on a Stella Artois and a bacon bun. I'm going, there's something very classy about what I'm doing here now.
I think there's actually some good tech at Wetherspoons that the NHS could take advantage of, because when I, you know, as I travel around the country as a lone comic, I've often gone into the Wetherspoons just because they have the app with the table service. So maybe we just put people straight in the beds and then they can just order the blood draw to the bed. You know what I mean? Like, oh, I need a bedpan, and just order it and it'll come, and I need a nurse, I need some more painkillers.
I mean, I'd say the only issue with that is...
just the one issue?
Just the one, is the NHS uses Windows 95.
Under sort of, you know, the previous government, the way to sort of speed up infrastructure projects was just to point at ones that were already there and say, that's new. So, but that seems to have gone by the wayside under Labour for whatever reason. They have announced plans for what they call an online hospital in a bid to cut waiting lists. The online hospital would enable surgeons to use Zoom calls to talk several hundred people at a time through how to do tracheotomies on themselves using standard household equipment and kitchen utensils and, if necessary, gardening equipment, or how to do a functional X-ray using only a powerful domestic torch, an Instamatic camera and a fluorescent marker pen. And it would also enable patients' diagnoses to be delivered by AI versions of their favourite celebrities. And I tried the trial version of this and really took the sting out of my diagnosis to have Zippy from Rainbow tell me I'm going bald.
You needed someone to tell you that?
Right, at the end of our health round, it's now 4 points all. Right, Rhea, it's time for your specialist subject. You have a doctorate in science, I believe. What type of science was your thing?
Viruses.
Oh. to me, science is science. So, according to a new report, by the year 2050, which, let's be brutally honest, is not nearly as far away as it once was, every constituency in the UK could have a what?
Oh, a teenage reform counsellor. It's actually an increased flood risk.
Yes, correct.
Isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Increased flood risk. You could also have had a 100-metre stretch of HS2, which is going to be broken up and distributed fairly around the country. But there's a council-owned K-pop group and a super prison full of pensioners. But increased flood risk, this seems to be the way the future is, Zoe. I mean, you live by the seaside.
I do live by the seaside. Thankfully, it's staying where it should be at the minute.
Right.
But a little bit further down the coast from me is Beachy Head, and there's some little houses perched on there precariously. And I don't know why they built it so close to the sea, really.
So you're talking about why they built the houses so close to the sea, or why they built Beachy Head so close to the sea? So,
I never thought about which one came first, but now you've put it that way, yeah. I do live quite close to the sea. I live in a basement flat quite close to the sea, so I've had to flood prep.
Right.
Yeah, I've bought a paddleboard. I think we're all right where we are, but there are large swathes of the United Kingdom, aren't there? They've built houses on areas that are now very flood-prone. And the thing is, people won't get insurance for that in the future, so it's really devastating. And it'll be doubly irritating when you're up to your ankles in flood water in your own living room and the water boards announce a hosepipe ban, which...
Stephen, I mean, politically, not preparing adequately for increased flood risk is, you know, a proud part of our national political heritage, isn't it? Is it something we're prepared to abandon now? I mean, what will we have left?
Well, look, not preparing for future events is what makes this country the place it is today. And look, I live on the 7th floor, so... I think it's probably going to be really good for my property price. Right. But, yeah, it's a big problem because, obviously, governments are re-elected every 5 years, and I think... even if you're a really big fan of Keir Starmer, I think you have to concede it's unlikely he'll still be Prime Minister in 2050. And so it's very easy for it to be someone else's problem, and that's why we're in the state we're now, where you have places basically being told by insurance companies, yeah, sorry, you're on your own.
Yes, according to a new report, some towns may have to be abandoned due to becoming uninsurable due to increased flood risks. The government says it will be investing £10.5 billion in flood defences by the year 2036. And we are still waiting to hear whether the deluge itself will agree to wait politely until the fiscal timetable and engineering logistics are complete. And we are, in fact, just hearing, as we record, that hydrogen, and oxygen, trading as water, have agreed to have agreed to delay any flooding until after 2036, but in return will be entitled to an extra 10% of volume in all floods over the following 20 years. let's move on to another sort of science-related question. Ed Miliband has just granted approval for the biggest what in the history of the United Kingdom?
Bacon sandwich.
Close, but not right. Actually, not close.
Is it a solar farm?
Correct, yes. The biggest solar farm in UK history.
But he's going to put it in Lincolnshire.
Yeah.
Lincolnshire is one of the counties that is under threat from greater flooding in the predicted report, apparently. It's going to be, yeah, so this could be something of a damp squib. yeah. And obviously farmers are up in arms because it's 300,000 acres of prime farmland. But we need energy, so we've got to make up a decision. What do we want? Do we want iPads or potatoes? And that is the hard that's the choice we have to make.
Yeah, it's going to be the UK's biggest ever solar power farm. The Woke-fired power plant could provide 300,000 homes with electricity, but would also plunge large parts of Lincolnshire into permanent darkness by stealing all the sun. According to the Telegraph's reporting of the issue. opponents have lambasted the plan for its takeover of farmland, saying it jeopardises our national food security and could leave us reliant on Vladimir Putin sending us lemon drizzle cakes and Russian vodka sausages to survive. Also, there are concerns about the danger of over-farming the sun. it's thought to be only around 5 billion more years of usable solar energy before our home star exhausts itself and stops working, whereas oil never dies. It's also become a sort of bit of a culture wars issue around green energy, and there has been a compromise suggested that solar panels are laid out in the shape of the Union Jack or of our national bird, the European Robin. I think that needs updating. That needs updating. Or lay them out in the shape of a lion drinking a pint of real ale, or Winston Churchill doing a V sign, or a bulldog trying to have sex with a red phone box. or whatever would make solar power sufficiently patriotic. Right, at the end of our science round, it's now 8 to Adam and Rhea and 6 to Stephen and Zoe. Right. So, everyone else has had their specialist subject, so Zoe, it's time for your specialist subject now, which is international espionage. you have long been one of the UK's top spies. Sorry, I'm not supposed to say that. Anyway, I'm going to ask you this question in a manner that only a spy would understand. So here is your question.
China.
Correct, yes. Yes, correct. China is the correct answer.
So this is this very confusing story that's happening at the moment because there are two gentlemen, both called Christopher, that kept it easy for me, who have been or were accused of spying for China. One of them was a civil servant and the other a teacher. And it was about to go on trial, I believe, this week. And it has suddenly been dropped. The whole case has been dropped because the CPS said there wasn't enough proof to say that Britain found China a reasonable threat. We weren't prepared to say that, therefore there was no point in moving the case forward. I think it's just a very complicated situation how we sort of see China, the communist but massive economic and capitalist sort of provider of all our goods. So we have to sort of keep it sweet, don't we? And then apparently it's come out that there is large amounts of evidence to show that China has been doing quite a lot of espionage stuff. But my thought of that was, well, good. Because if they weren't spying on us, then they wouldn't see us as anything at all. Like, it's better to be talked about than not talked about.
Ultimately, everyone kind of gets that the government's real position, both under the last Conservative government and under this Labour one, is, well, they are spying on us, but fridges and smartphones are great. so, you know, look, you got to take the rough with the smooth. And I think then it will therefore sort of blow over. I think the bigger thing will be this question about this super embassy, which, yeah, this China wants to build a bigger embassy. The embassy here is actually the oldest embassy that China has in the world, and they want to build a new snazzy one. And there's a lot of political tension about that, and I think that may be a story which runs and runs.
Given how much of our data we give away on a daily basis to all big companies, American companies, everybody else. And then we get a little bit upset when China comes in and does it with, I mean, we've, or if you're on TikTok, you've sold your soul to China already. Like they know everything about, by the way, actually, Stephen, there is something to deal with the rough and the smooth on TikTok shop. I'll show you later. what was the question?
Yeah, the question was, are you worried about being China having all your secrets?
Having all my secrets. Yeah. Listen, when it comes down to it, with this face, with this Asian face, there's only one side I'm going to fall on, all right? So it's lovely living here. I love all you pale people. But when it comes down to it, you know, I got to pick a side. And and that side pays me well.
Yes, the government has faced criticism after an espionage case collapsed because it was unwilling to describe China as a threat to national security and enemy of this nation. China, with its vast economic power, its supply of cheap electrical goods, its formidable technological capabilities, its supply of critical minerals, its ominous military power, its brightly coloured toys, and its ability to bring our society to a grinding halt with a flick of a couple of switches, plus its temptingly delicious dumplings and its functionally indispensable role in the continuing working of British national infrastructure. Is China a threat? Hell yes! But you can't spell threat without treat. Does China make temptingly cheap electrical goods? Even hella yes. So we are stuck. The statement alleged that the two Chrises, Cash and Berry, passed information about ministers likely to be promoted to the cabinet. So not really matters of national security, more just stuff for China to have a little giggle at. Well, at the end of that round, it's 12 points all, which means... which means that once again we go to a tiebreaker. Our tiebreaker this week, OpenAI has announced that it will allow adults to use ChatGPT to generate erotic content. But what I'm challenging our panellists to do is to develop the title of an erotic version of a Radio 4 show that AI could not produce. And remember, this is slightly complicated by the fact that this has to be suitable for broadcast at 6:30 p.m. Zoe?
Desert Island Dicks. News Jizz. There we go.
They met Miss World tonight?
Rhea?
Just a minute. It'll take me longer than that. AKA Woman's Hour.
Well, I'm going to give the victory to Adam and Rhea. Just some news reaching us. The White House has slammed the Mercury Music Prize Committee for overlooking President Trump. Thank you very much for listening to the News Quiz. Goodbye. Taking part in the News Quiz were Adam Kay, Rhea Lina, Zoe Lyons and Stephen Bush. In the chair was me, Andy Zaltzman, and additional material was written by Christina Riggs, Peter Talouche, Daman Bamra and Ru Posco. The producer was Rajiv Kuria, and it was a BBC Studios production for Radio 4.
And if you're craving more witty political conversation, you can tune into Strong Message here on BBC Sounds, the podcast.